Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show. We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Before we started the episode, Dave gave me the cue to remind me that this is segment one, which I appreciated, because we did go over a long rant about just today's world and the craziness of today's world.
We were like,
okay, hey, we got to get upstairs. We got to start recording. We got to get going quickly because we have other things to do, you know.
You and we came up here and ranted about politics.
Politics for like 30 minutes.
Dude, it's so crazy. Would you ever be a politician?
No.
It's like, no way.
Absolutely not. I'm way too smart.
I'm a dumb guy.
I'm dumb.
Yeah.
Way too smart to be a politician.
There's no way. Because I don't know what the prerequisites are. I don't know what altars you have to make sacrifices on. But like, I wouldn't do it.
Put my family through that.
I'd get murdered.
I think.
Figuratively.
I think.
Probably.
Maybe physically.
Maybe really. Maybe actually. I don't think I'd be like that. I don't think I would actually get to that level where I would have any power.
I think.
Because they would. I think they'd put the kibosh on me soon.
Yeah, you wouldn't make it to the point where people would get to have the opportunity to kill you.
Yeah.
I think maybe in a weird world, if I had retired early in my life, the kids are all out of the, and I live in a really small Oklahoma town.
Yeah.
And I think like, hey, I have the time and I could help my town and become like the mayor of the town.
Yeah.
I could see myself possibly doing that.
Okay. That's a good point. Yeah. Cause local politics is totally different.
But I wouldn't want to,
you know,
even
if
be
you're in California, it isn't, it's the same, but you know, in Oklahoma, it is different.
But I wouldn't even want to be like a city mayor. I'd want to be like maybe, I don't want to be any of it, but like if I was going to be, it'd be a small town. Listen, we're a population of 600 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I am already retired and I'm just going to give my services to the town.
Yeah. I think I could see myself maybe doing that. Did you know between our houses, there is technically a town for sale?
What?
Yes, Oneida. The town of Oneida
is for sale.
The town is
Patreon.com/TheCatholicManShow. If we can get enough patrons, we will buy a freaking town.
It's a parking lot. Somehow, I forget this story about how in Oneida. In fact, there's a diner right there Oneida Diner.
Yeah, I've seen the sign.
The town is actually catty corner to the diner. It's like there's like a flea market.
Yeah.
Right there.
In the post office or something?
Yeah, it's just the whole town has been relegated to that parking lot.
Dude, would it be cool?
And you can, it's for sale.
Well, how much is it?
I don't know.
Wouldn't it be cool if we bought it and then, like, changed its name and, like, yeah, we should just be the mayors of it.
I've actually tried to figure this out. Like, wait, if I buy it, could I, like, finagle myself into being, like, mayor and then representative of... Mm-hmm. Of Oneida.
Can I make my own?
But the thing is, it has a population of zero. Nobody lives in the parking lot.
Yeah.
So it's like there's nobody to represent. You'd have to actually domicile in the parking lot. And then, I don't know, we'd have to talk to some of our attorney friends.
Yeah, Eric Graylis. Would you give us a call?
Right, see if we could become the representative of ourselves in the Oklahoma Senate.
Dude, that'd be so
And start
cool.
wheeling and dealing, baby. You can't vote me out.
And what if we said, like, you know what? No taxes.
Yo, in Oneida, we do things a little differently.
Actually,
socialism seems pretty good all of a sudden.
Actually,
small tax base is ammo. Oh, okay.
You have to pay in ammo.
Yeah, okay. Once again, though, you're the only one who lives there. So yeah. It's like the idea of a tax to yourself is silly.
Yeah.
People usually call that saving, actually.
Yeah, typically. What are we drinking this evening?
Well, you brought it. But it's the Prideful Goat. It's a rye. Typically, like, I'm not anti-rye, but I'm not a rye guy. But this is fantastic.
Yeah, unfiltered cask strength, 6-year straight rye whiskey. I think it's 95% rye, 5% malted barley.
Mm-hmm.
And aged in new American oak barrels. It's right around 57.5% ABV.
Yeah, so I was surprised being cask strength that it's only 6 years old, that it was under 60% alcohol. You know, I was just surprised by that.
We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass. Cheers.
And cheers to Jesus.
Yeah. It's really good. It's $70 for the bottle. Mm-hmm. So it's not cheap.
It's much sweeter than what I was anticipating. Like, it's got caramel. It's got, like, maybe brown sugar. I don't know. It's got some warm, like, toasted sweetness.
I think you're just that way right now because you've been putting sugar on your bacon.
Dude, I'm so mad about that. So I guess we have to tell that story. I slaughtered a pig this last weekend.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
It was really great. Had a lot of,
some good learning moments, but nothing catastrophic. Like, what you want to do, like, on these type of situations is you want to have learning moments that don't ruin anything.
Right.
And I think we succeeded in that.
Yeah, definitely.
No problem.
Yep, it was no big deal. And so I've slaughtered pigs before. I've helped.
We talked about it last week in last week's episode.
I got the bacon, and I've been curing the bacon. Except that I just found out this evening while you were here,
which is delicious,
that I'm not curing the bacon.
You're sweetening.
I'm sweetening the bacon. I told my daughters to go mix half 50-50 salt and brown sugar. And I only this evening found out that they mixed 50-50 white sugar and brown sugar, which does not cure bacon. Only the salt will cure the bacon. I just found this out. I'm so mad because, like, these are huge, thick slabs of bacon. It's probably 40 pounds of bacon.
Right.
And we're leaving on vacation. It's going to take, like, at least 5 days of salting this to cure the... Luckily, I've had it in the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
Because, when you cure bacon, you don't actually have to put it in the fridge. You can just leave it on the counter.
It's also good to do, though.
It's better to do.
Yeah.
But, so that's, it's going to be real, real sugary.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, because, like, when you put the salt on top of it and all the moisture goes out of it, it may drain all the sugar. I don't know.
Look, it's going to, as much sugar as it will be able to have, it'll have.
Okay.
It's going to be maximum sugar bacon.
Dude, tonight I was building fences and panels.
Uh-huh.
And I have a lab, and she's still young, and it's hard to control her still a little bit. We haven't dedicated a ton of time in training this dog.
Mm-hmm.
Like I did my last dog. My last dog was awesome. Riley was so great.
Yeah.
But she's getting there. She's getting a lot better.
Okay.
And so I've been, like, testing the waters with her, like, having her go out into the field with me and things like that, but staying around me where she's not going out crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been doing really well. But tonight, so I'm fixing this panel, and all of a sudden she just darts towards something. We run, and I'm like, I call her multiple times, very stern. I mean, doesn't even not even a hesitation of coming back.
Yeah.
Which is not...
She was locked in.
It locked in.
Rabbit? Was it a rabbit?
It was the mini horse.
No.
Yes. Of my neighbor. My neighbor has several
mini
horses.
She was going to chase it down and like...
Luckily...
Dude, I would... If I was a dog, I wouldn't go after a mini horse. Like, horses are scary.
Yeah.
Even mini ones... Like, dude, I wouldn't mess with a mini horse.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not.
They leave them out in the pasture. The coyotes don't
mess
you,
with them.
Don't yeah. eat them. You'd think that, like,
I know. It made me nervous because I was like, gosh, if I have to buy a stupid mini horse for my neighbor, I would be so mad. Luckily, like, right when she got up close to it, the big horse wasn't close, and it startled her, and she pumped the brakes and stopped. And then I called her, and she came back. But I was thinking, like, I had, like, just flashes of, like, this is ending terribly.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, it did not, though. But we do have, also, deer on my property.
Congratulations.
Out, which is awesome.
Because you can actually shoot out on your place, too.
Yeah, I mean, we're probably not going to hunt on my land. But
I wouldn't.
But, yeah. I mean, I just want to, like...
Unless, of course, I mean, it depends on how big the deer is. I mean, obviously, if it's a really big deer...
It also depends on, like, how hungry are we.
Right.
But it's just cool to have live animals.
Totally.
So one thing that we have started doing, you know, since I've moved out into the... I want to incorporate your tradition that you have on Sundays of walking the land. I think that's a great idea. Like, when you said that, I was like, ooh, that's a good one. I'm gonna keep that one.
Uh-huh.
We haven't done it yet because my son is still recovering. Like, we've had a lot of craziness in our family.
Yeah.
But one thing my wife and I have done is we intentionally go out into our front yard when the sunset is happening. Like, nice. We stop what we're doing and go outside and just sit and have some leisure while watching the sunset. And we've been doing that almost every night for the last maybe 4 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
And it's been...
That's like high level of consistency.
It's been really great. I'll tell you...
Well, this is a great segue. We'll be right back.
Men, have you checked out Exodus 90 lately? If you've heard of Exodus 90 before, you're probably thinking cold showers and Lent. But the Exodus 90 app offers so much more. It's a daily companion to help you grow to closer to God and to become the man you want to be. This summer, I'm following along with the app's daily scriptures, reflections, and prayers. It's awesome. On the app, you can join the Enthronement to the Sacred Heart, the Exodus 90 Summer Book Club, and St. Michael's Lent, which starts August 15th and leads up to the Feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 29th. St. Michael's Lent is an ancient tradition of prayer and fasting popularized by St. Francis in the Middle Ages that's been lost in our time. Let's bring it back. Join the men of Exodus 90 and four Carlos Martins, Catholic priest, exorcist, and host of the Exorcist Files, who will serve as our spiritual guide for St. Michael's Lent this year on the Exodus 90 app. We will awaken to invisible realities and enter into the spiritual battle that rages around us all the time. Go to Exodus90.com for a 14-day free trial to the Exodus 90 app and to learn more about St. Michael's Lent. That's Exodus90.com to join us for St. Michael's Lent starting August 15th.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles, here with Adam Minahan. We're drinking the Prideful Goat.
Sounds very vicey.
It does. Vicious. I think the word you're looking for is vicious.
Yeah.
You know what, Adam? We haven't done this in a while. Why do we drink on this show?
I want to.
Very good. Any other questions?
We actually have done, we used to get a lot of questions about this when we first started the show.
When we first started, though, there were very few Catholic podcasts.
Right.
There were only a handful.
And
the, like,
the idea of drinking on air, because we're also on the radio, which is why you hear breaks and commercials and
right.
things like that.
Right. And so, yeah, we were one of the, like, we were the, look, I know everybody drinks on their podcast now. Okay, we were doing it before it was cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, way before it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so, We want,
although we got to give props to Catholic Stuff You Should Know, the priests on Catholic stuff. I mean, they are really, they're the goats, if you want to bring in the whiskey here. They're the goats.
They're the humble goats.
Yeah, exactly. They were the first.
Yeah.
Really pioneering the, hey, it's all right. We can drink whiskey on a podcast. No problem.
Because they were seminarians also.
Yeah, but then even once, they kept doing it.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah. So, you know, we want to cultivate a life of leisure. We want, and in order to, I actually just wrote a whole article on this very topic on Sword and Spade. But we want to cultivate a life of leisure. We want to enjoy the things that of this life for its sake, for the goodness of it, of what it is. And in order to enjoy those things, you enjoy them for what they are, and in moderation. Mm-hmm.
They should be enjoyed for their goodness.
Yeah. To that end.
Mm-hmm.
And it also cultivates a good conversation.
Right.
It's something that you can share with another.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as you are uplifting the good in your actions, not drinking to excess, obviously.
And how, like when we have a whiskey on, we drink it slow. We enjoy the craftsmanship.
Right.
We, like, try to bring out the, like, a lot of hard work and hours and years have gone into making, like, at least 6 years into making this whiskey.
Right. And it's really more than that, because the experience, all that led up to refining this, you know, this particular dram.
Yeah. Anyway, that's why we do it. But we did a whole Catholic Answers Focus episode on that. We've done many episodes. Yeah. Just go look that up on our...
We just haven't talked about it in a while, so I thought, hey, maybe we should.
Yeah. So before the break, I was saying that my wife and I have decided to stop what we're doing when we see the sun going down. And Oklahoma has beautiful sunsets.
Yeah, we do. I know everybody says they have the best sunsets, but they don't. Only one.
Well, just like logically, there's no way that's possible.
I mean, only one place can have the best sunsets.
Right. It's not here, but.
Could be.
Well, we don't. Yeah. But
really, actually, if you go north, one thing that the sunsets have is that they last longer. You know, the closer you get to the North Pole, where, you know, there's a day where the sun never sets. Mm-hmm. It's like, that's a long sunset.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? That is nice.
Yeah. So we'll go out and we just, we have just some lawn chairs and we just, because right now we're still trying to move in. Like, we were lucky to find some lawn chairs, but we've thrown some out there and she and I will just sit and enjoy watching the sunset. And actually has been so good for our marriage because it's given us
really
like,
struggling before.
No,
I'm just kidding.
No. No, she has a very high, she's an extremely patient, virtuous woman. She has a high threshold for me. You know,
yeah,
like,
sure.
She has a lot, she's a very lenient, very forgiving for all of my faults. But it has been very good for our marriage because it has provided us a time that we've carved out to organically just waste time together.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we talk, sometimes we don't, but it just gives us time to get, and we don't, like, the kids stay inside. They go get ready for bed.
Yeah.
So it's just her and I, which, you know.
That works here in the summer. In the winter, you know, it'll be like 5 o'clock.
But do it while you can. Yeah, but before we had that time, like, there was very little time that we actually had just her and I before bed.
Sure.
You know, before, like, we were just so mentally exhausted. You're like, yeah, I just, you know, let's hang out for a second, but I'm not all there because I'm very tired.
Right.
So, anyway, it's been really good.
Pamela and I take the trash out together.
Oh, nice. You know what I've been thinking about? Like, so I have a long, like, kind of like you, a long way.
A long driveway.
Dude, I'm totally making a cart to put my trash bins in.
I thought that too, and I have
wheels. I have caster wheels. Like, I'm totally going to do that. There's like, yeah, totally doing that.
Yeah, I thought I would do that too, but I've got to the point where I actually enjoy the walk.
Mm. You know what? It's even a better drive.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, but I have decided not to do that. I'm just going to walk. I'm just going to push it out there.
I may have a longer, I don't know, we're probably about the same.
I think mine's longer.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so. Yeah.
I think mine's just a hair longer. Anyway, not like it's a competition, except I'm beating you.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're about to give a talk.
I'm giving a talk tomorrow. By the time you listen to this, it will not be tomorrow. I'll be talking at the discipleship conference in Oklahoma City.
What's funny is, like, this week you're giving a talk, and in like a week and a half or 2 weeks, I'm giving a talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very, like, abnormal, because we're normally giving talks together
at the same time, right?
But this, like, because of our schedules and things like that, it just didn't work out. So
right.
It's going to be interesting to see. I'm excited to see how many people boo at yours.
I'll just tell them to be quiet in the back and in the front.
Yeah.
All of you. Being very rude.
So what are you going to talk about?
We're going to be talking about leisure, which is what we're talking about tonight.
Okay.
So I'm giving a talk on holy leisure tomorrow. Leisure is something that's just very misunderstood,
right,
by our culture. People are just raised with, I think, almost a negative view of the word leisure. Like, if you're described as a man of leisure, it could be even a slight.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, you mean you're lazy, mm-hmm. you know?
Well, do you think that Kant and Karl Marx kind of, like, instilled that into...
Yeah, I mean, I think certainly Karl Marx, I'm just not that familiar with Kant to say.
You can't say.
I can't do it.
Okay.
I just can't. But yeah, certainly Karl Marx and the whole communist movement, the socialist movement. Yes, I mean, certainly that's a big part of the philosophy of a work, and that's what you glorify.
Yeah, I mean, this is what,
And it was, it's not just the, I mean, obviously there is a glory in working.
Right? Yeah, I mean, we talked about that actually not too long
ago. But that's not what they're doing. That's right. Not what the socialists have done or what Karl Marx, they wanted to glorify work for work's sake, for the productivity of work, right? Mm-hmm. That it would produce.
For the utilitarian purpose of
right.
work.
And they sought to reduce man into a machine of product.
Yep.
Right? That he would just be a producer.
Mm-hmm.
And that reduces it, that strips him of his humanity, of his personhood, right? And it turns him into a cog in a wheel, a replaceable, totally, something that's like, oh, you don't really matter. There's a lot of workers. There's always more workers, right? We can just switch you out for anybody because anybody can do the work, right? Your individuality doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was trying to think of this through in my head, so this is a raw thought. Could be wrong, or it could be not fleshed out very well. But, you know, from a political and a physical, natural level, you know, it's wrong to have that thought process that, you're made for work. Because from a utilitarian purpose, like you said, there's always the next person, right? There's always somebody else that can fill your shoes.
Yeah.
Like, it's very clear, like, you're not made for this. You don't need, like, this isn't something anybody can replace you.
Right.
Right. But in the spiritual level as well, it's like, actually, you know,
you can't be replaced. You're totally irreplaceable.
You're totally irreplaceable. And it actually has nothing to do with your work.
You know what? Let's look at Genesis real quick. Okay, because we're talking about who is man and what was he made for?
Yeah, but don't you agree with that? Like, you're actually not made for, like, it's actually not you that is working. You're cooperating with God.
Well, that's I want to answer your question.
Oh,
by
okay.
looking at Genesis.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
So, when you go to Genesis 2. I'm referring to the second creation story. In verse 7, you have God creating man from the clay. Okay, and there's a pun or a play on words that takes place in the Hebrew. I'm not a Hebrew scholar, but it's pretty,
just take my word for it.
Yeah, just believe me.
Yeah.
Where Adam and between Adam and Aduma, which Adam means obviously man, and Aduma means earth, dirt, right? So he's made from the dirt, and he's named after the dirt, okay? So Adam comes from the dirt, but he's also for the dirt, because immediately after that, God places him in the garden. This is before the fall, and tells him, gives him a job. You are to cultivate the garden. But there's a line in there that I think gets missed. And it's kind of a throwaway line that really stuck out to me. And I wouldn't have noticed it if I wasn't reading this story with my leisure lens, leisure glasses on. Mm. But he says that God... You know what? I'm going to save it. I'm going to cliffhanger it.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you what God says on the other side of the break. I will speak for him.
Well, no, I won't. No, don't do that.
That's a joke, but I will say what he said. I'll tell you what he said.
You tell me what he said. That's not what he said.
That's not what he said to me. Not what he told me. Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. Talk about leisure this evening. Real quick, before we get back to Dave's cliffhanger, I just want to make sure that we've gotten a lot of people asking about it. Catholic Man Show campout signups have not happened yet. You have not missed it. It will be this month. When this episode airs, it will probably be within the next week or so. Patrons get first right, and then we send it out. It gets filled up every year. You can join us and support us on Patreon. We also have like some really good conversations happening on Patreon right now, especially with Dr. Aaron Henderson, like answering some questions. and we have just a lot of like really, it's building back up. We're building it back up with a lot more activity, and you and I are becoming a lot more active in it, because for a little while there, we weren't as active as what we probably should have been. Anyway, Patreon.com/The Catholic Man Show, and the campout is quickly approaching. It's the last weekend in September.
Correct. Yeah, I have an ask on the campout. If you sign up, please come.
Right.
Yeah, and we understand. Look, sometimes you sign up for something and things happen out of your control. Totally. You know that
totally
happens.
Get that.
But if you do sign up, and we want you to sign up, we want you to come. But if you sign up, please commit to coming, because every year there's people who end up canceling at the last minute. And like I said, totally understand that things happen. But that means that there's other people who wanted to come.
Right.
You know,
who can't. And like the thing is also, we buy all the food and the drink for the camp out. Like you don't have to pay for anything whenever you get there, like for food, or worry about dinners or lunch,
if you're
any
a patron.
Meals. If you're a patron. And so we purchase a lot of food.
Yeah. So anyway, That's just the one. I just want to say that.
Okay.
We hope you're there. I want to see you there.
Can't wait. Hey, the Finster said he may make an appearance.
What?
Yeah. I talked to him. I texted him just the other day.
Dude, I'm going to text him when we're done.
Okay. So Genesis 2. You're talking about Genesis 2.
Okay. So Genesis 2. And about the creation of man. Okay. So God, what he does is he creates Adam from the dirt. He's from the dirt for the dirt. And then it says he took man and settled him in the garden to cultivate it. Out of the ground, the Lord God made various trees grow that were delightful to look at. Okay? That, to me, just was like, because I was reading this, preparing for leisure, excuse me. Dude, I like almost choked on a piece of ice earlier today, and it's still, like, I don't know.
It should have melted by now.
It's still wearing on me. Anyway, this line about the trees being delightful to look at is so critical when we're thinking about leisure, okay? What this really made me see was that, yeah, okay, so God, Adam had a job, and his job was to essentially be the Logos, represent, be God's representative on earth, that he would represent God to creation. Okay? That's the principal way that he was made in God's image. Okay, that he was the God's ambassador and exercised authority over the earth in like representing God. Okay, so the tree is delightful to look at, and it's beautiful and it's good in and of itself, but it doesn't know what it's planted next to. Okay, it was Adam's job to organize these things. However, the way that the garden is created, it was done so that this work that he had was all leisure. He wasn't tending the garden because he had to. He tended the garden because it was good to do. Tending the garden was good. And so he did it.
A servile aspect.
It wasn't servile. It was it was more of like a liberal arts, right? Because he wasn't doing it in order to achieve an end. There was an end to do. But, you know, like some people garden as a hobby. You know, they're not trying to like grow food. You know, they do plant tomatoes. And it's like, oh, yeah, then I eat tomatoes. But like, really, it's about just gardening. Like, mm-hmm. that's what they like. Mm-hmm. And it's leisurely for them. And it's like, oh, cool, I also get tomatoes out of the deal. Mm-hmm. Or flowers, right? So that's kind of what Adam is doing here. Because he was when you compare his life before and after the fall, here before the fall, he's in a constant state of feasting. He is not having to worry about securing the needs, like he doesn't have to worry about, oh, I need to get enough food, caring for the needs of his body, right? He just is in this perpetual state of feasting, which was both a spiritual and a physical feast. And so it seems to me that his existence in the garden was one of constant leisure, that everything he did was out of the goodness simply of doing it. Because these trees are delightful to look at. And so that's one of the key things about leisure, is that it needs to be a good that you do for its own sake. Okay, so if you're mowing the grass because it needs to be mowed, I find there is certainly an element of leisure mowing the grass. Like it, mm-hmm. you know, like it's just something nice about doing it, especially mm-hmm. when you have a zero turn. Okay. Mm-hmm. But in the end of the day,
it doesn't have a flat tire.
Yes. No, dude, don't even get me started. But at the end of the day, you're mowing the grass in order to achieve an end.
Right.
And you're not doing it simply like, I mowed the grass yesterday. I'm not going to mow it tomorrow.
Right.
You know, I'm not just going out doing it. It's like, cause it's just fun to drive this thing around.
I mean, but for like music, you make music for music's sake.
Right. I will play the piano when no one is here.
Right.
Just because it's good in itself.
Right.
The music itself is the goal. I'm not trying to impress anyone with the music. I'm not trying to practice the music.
Right.
I'm just playing the music. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Making the music. And so it seems like that's really the state that Adam was in the garden pre-fall. Because immediately after that, his consequences are, now you will, all of these things that you had before, you will have to toil and this by the sweat of your brow. The leisure now is gone from his work. And so that was just a really key distinction, that now he's going to have to spend time.
What happens? You have to unleisure so that you can leisure.
Mm-hmm. Which he didn't have to do before.
Hmm. Yeah.
Because he, you know, his authority over the garden... I have also my own private speculations about this, that it seems to me like he could simply command. He had authority, almost a godlike authority over the garden. He could simply tell the tree to grow. He could, you know, that's my own private speculation.
Yeah, I think you're wrong there, but that's fine.
Yeah.
Especially if it's out of its natural, like, ways. Like, it couldn't just say, like, oak tree, grow, and, like, it grow to a...
Well, I'm not saying it happened instantly. But he could tell.
Naturally, it's going to be growing. Like that's what the end of.
But
the
he could tell it where to grow, or he could, you know, he could order the garden set in almost a godlike way, because he was almost the Logos on Earth. He I don't want to say it that way. That's a bad way to say it. But he was the representative of the Logos on Earth. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. with very big speculations on my part. I like, but kind of what you were saying about this idea of unleisure. I think a lot of people would associate sloth and leisure, right? This just kind of laziness,
right?
Idleness. Mm-hmm. But this is historically not at all the way leisure has been understood or talked about. In fact, leisurelessness would be, that's what they would define sloth. It's like some, you don't have leisure. That was actually how they defined sloth in the Middle Ages. And so it was kind of like what you were saying about the Greeks did something similar, where they would say you have to unleisure, which is their word for working, so that you can leisure, which I think is right. Really.
Yeah, I mean, Aristotle talks about this in his Politics. Like, you know, and it's amazing that he came to this conclusion that we were made for leisure during this time period. I mean, Aristotle, like, and Plato are both, like, just incredible human beings.
Totally.
But, yeah, so
it's interesting. It sets the bar on leisure. Like, it makes leisure the standard.
Well, because, like, unleisure is the negative, right? It's the negative aspect of the word. It's, like, it's the non of something. Compared to leisure, which is the thing. So it's saying like the normal is the thing, which is leisure.
Mm-hmm.
The unnormal thing is unleisure, namely
right.
Work.
Right.
Which is like an un-American thing to really think about.
Yes. And that is like, I think the big takeaway from the concept of leisure. Like if all of this is new to you, remember this. We do not rest so that we can work. We work so that we can rest.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point. Like, resting is the goal. That's actually the state that we want to be in. We want to be in a state of leisure.
And eternally.
Eternally, right. Like, that's exactly right. So if we can rest, if we can have more leisure and work less, that would be good. That would be an objective good. Obviously, there's a prudential amount of, you know, everything, but ultimately that is...
A prudential amount of everything.
Yes.
I agree.
Yeah. That's, you know, like when you're homeschooling, you have to come up with kid versions of all the virtues.
Mm-hmm.
Like temperance is a healthy amount of everything.
Nice.
It's healthy. Just whatever the healthy amount is,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, honestly, learning all these kid definitions, it's like... really helped me. It's like, you know what? That's really beautiful.
Yeah.
You know? So there are, and we're coming up on the break here, but I want to talk about the three main characteristics of leisure Joseph Pieper, the Peepster, lays out in his phenomenal book, Leisure, the Basis of Culture.
Yeah, there has to be plenty is one of them.
That is one of them. That's not one of these three essential... Not in those words, anyway.
Okay.
You're close. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I feel like we have to rush and finish talking about leisure. I'm just kidding, but we are talking about leisure today. Right before the break, I mentioned one of Adam and I's favorite authors, Joseph Pieper,
mm-hmm.
aka the Peepster. He wrote actually several things on leisure. Most of them are really essays that have been compiled into books. Leisure, the Basis of Culture, is one of those essays, which is just it's fantastic.
Yeah,
is one of those things that first time I read it, it like changed the way I thought about life.
We have a whole reading study guide on this book for our patrons. So just FYI.
Yeah, if you're a patron, just go to Patreon and you can download the study guide.
Mm-hmm.
Which also there's really good questions. So if you want to, if you're going through this together in a group, these I think the discussion questions. I was reading them today and thinking, you know what? That's a really good provoking question. thought-provoking question. Mm-hmm. And this, it would be an excellent book to read together. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't have to, you don't have to be an, you know, like there are some books where like, hey, if you really want to get the most, like Dante's Inferno, if you don't have somebody who kind of knows Dante's Inferno, you still get a lot out of it, but you're going to miss a lot. Mm-hmm. Okay. Just because it's a, mm-hmm. it's a complex book, but you guys could get, people could get together, read this, the study guide would be all you need and you'd have a great conversation. So, Pieper says that there are three main characteristics, essential characteristics to leisure. Okay. The first one is that it implies an attitude of non-activity. Okay. Which I think is a little bit, someone might misunderstand that because you don't have to be sitting down. Mm-hmm. You can actually have, you can be like hiking, you can be climbing a mountain.
Right.
Right. You can actually be doing something strenuous. But the point is that you're not trying to do anything. You know, you're not trying to like produce anything. You're not trying to like achieve a goal. Actually, there are no goals. There's no goals in leisure, other than just leisuring around. Mm-hmm. You know, like by the time I'm done, I want people to start calling me my liege.
Hmm.
Yeah, because I'm just so
not to be confused with the luge when they just throw you in the luge.
Totally different thing. Not much leisure. And that's the situation. But it's like, I think this non-activity, the best way to think about it is sort of an interior silence, right? That you are at rest sort of mentally. You're in an attitude of reception. Okay? Mm-hmm. Just kind of put...
Yeah, I mean, leisure is a mindful receptivity.
Right. Yeah, it's you're not being busy, you're letting things happen. Whatever those things are that you have mm-hmm. that you're doing. You know, there's kind of this idea of just stopping, pausing everything, and then kind of like observing your place in creation. And have kind of getting a big mental view of creation and just relishing in it and just like being there, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Just that's it, mm-hmm. you know? He says something, he says that leisure is a form of silence that is the necessary condition for the apprehension of reality, which sounds like something a philosopher would say, but I think it's also a necessary condition for contemplation. Contemplation is a form of leisure.
Right.
Right. And so, but if you can't first do this, have this silence, just being, right? And then recognizing your place in this in creation.
Right.
There's a humbling element to that.
Right.
Which, you know, that's the beginning of contemplation.
Mm-hmm.
The next thing is that leisure possesses an attitude of contemplative celebration.
Mm-hmm.
Which is so important, okay? He actually mentions Labor Day in the book. Apparently, Labor Day is like a popular thing in other countries too. It's not just America. But he says it's dumb. Labor Day is dumb.
Why?
Because you have a day. I thought about it, it's like, yeah, this is totally a communist thing to do. You have a day that's celebrating work for work's sake. It's just a day of like, oh, let's give a day off so we can work harder. It's just about work for work's sake. And it's like, we can work better tomorrow. It has nothing to do with celebrating anything real. There's actually no real celebration. Pieper has this great, great line. His point is that when you divorce the divine from your celebrations, he says that they become a new hectic form of work, which is totally true.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing that, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, well, it's National Thank a Teacher Day. So now I have to like, you know, it's like, not that I don't want to thank a teacher. Obviously, I'm very thankful for the teachers, but it's like this holiday, now I have to like, oh, go find a way to do it. It's like,
this is why I also like.
Even like National Drink a Beer Day. Sounds like a great day, but it's like, it actually becomes a work.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, I just have to, why? It's just arbitrary. It's just drink a beer day. And so even drinking a beer becomes a, like a weird form of work.
Mm-hmm.
Something that should be leisurely isn't.
Right.
Because there's
a holiday. It used to be, you know, like the etymology of holiday is like a holy day.
A holy day. Yeah. Don't tell the seculars that, because I don't think they've figured it out yet.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. It's a holy day. And so that's
ordered towards the divine. That's the difference.
Correct. It has to be ordered towards the divine. Okay. And this, if you don't have that, the contemplative celebration, there's nothing to celebrate. Okay. You need to have something. And it's interesting. When we have this celebration, we really do become like God. Look, once again, going back to the creation story, we become like God saying, it is very good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that's this element of leisure, where you behold a good and you just look at it and you say, it is very good in itself. I'm not, you know, using it for anything. I'm just enjoying its own goodness. Okay? And so
for its own end. That's the question, like, can you actually have a festivity or like celebrate something for its own end without it being a divine end, because the end of man is to be with the divine.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're celebrating or you're feasting upon something that is something that will not satiate you fully, you're actually not fully like resting.
Correct.
Or feasting.
Right. He says it this way. Leisure draws its vitality from affirmation. Okay, you're just looking at a good and affirming its goodness. The highest form of affirmation is the festival. And so, yes, you have, like, this celebration is that you're having this festival. He goes on to, I'm going to, like, summarize this. The highest form of the festival is the sacrifice of the Mass. That is the most festive festival of all the feasting, is this holy sacrifice of the Mass. But I want to also turn to this other thing he says. This is all part of this celebration. And this was something that I thought was interesting. He says, the festival in its origins, the festival has its origin in leisure. And because it is a celebration, it's more than effortless. It is the direct opposite of effort. And at first I was like, well, I don't know, dude. I've actually thrown a festival before.
Well, yeah.
And it's not effort. It's like actually a lot of work, you know? And so I was thinking about it, and it's about this interior disposition. And then I was like, okay, does it take effort to enjoy a picturesque sunset? You can't even help it, right? It is totally effortless.
Yeah.
You know, does it take work to rejoice in the beauty of a bride on her wedding day? Or does a lover need to be told to desire his beloved? Like, no.
Right.
All of these, you try not to do it. That's actually going to be harder.
Right.
And I wanted to turn, with the time we have left, have you ever, Adam, like, known somebody, and then, like, you were at their house, and then, like, you found out, like they're just like an ugly friend of yours, but they're like, you go over to their house and they have some other family, like, bro, is that your cousin? And she's like, oh yeah, that's my cousin. You're like, that girl over there is your cousin. You're telling me your face and that girl, it's like, she's your cousin. And he's like, yeah, it's my cousin. Sometimes, like, ugly dudes have good looking cousins.
This is a weird thing for you to be talking
about. Leisure has one. Not that leisure isn't ugly dude. But Leisure has a really good-looking cousin named Erotic Love.
Okay.
Eros is the cousin of Leisure.
So the analogy really didn't hold that well.
Look, but you'll remember it. Okay? So
I was like thinking, like, where are you going with this?
Yeah,
this
it's okay.
Like, yeah.
I'm helping you remember it.
Okay, thank you.
Leisure has a hot cousin
okay.
named Eros. and something that's also very misunderstood, but you know, God made us so that we would have this innate desire to be satiated in beauty, and not just beauty, infinite beauty.
Mm-hmm.
That he alone, mm-hmm. we would have this ultimate desire for him, okay? So that's Eros. When we are having these moments of leisure and we behold the good, mm-hmm. it is Eros and leisure working together that actually compel us into this spiritual experience. Mm-hmm. We can talk a little bit more about that after the break, or after the on the podcast, because that's the last segment. But
okay.
I just wanted to get that in because
I loved it. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
Cheers to Jesus.
Did you get it? Love, Eros. I loved it. Eros.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
So, yes, but that was like really, I was really digging on that today about, because leisure is erotic.
Right.
For you to sit there and rejoice in some good, some beauty. Because the transcendentals, truth, goodness, and beauty, in God all become the same thing, right? That his goodness is beautiful and his the truth is good, right? Like, it's all the same. So for those transcendentals, it's a circle.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is. I actually called our good friend Deacon Garlic today to talk about this because I wanted to make sure I was like couching this the right way.
Okay.
We have an innate capacity for Eros.
Did you talk to him on the phone or in person?
On the phone.
Dang it. I was hoping that you'd be able to tell me how many eye rolls he gave you. You're not going to be able to say that over the phone.
I am not, but I feel confident that it was very low.
Under three?
Oh, definitely. I would say it was zero.
Wow. Oh, so at least one. Okay.
but so we have this innate capacity for Eros. So leisure is not what gives us the capacity for it, right? Because we have it from birth, this desire. But leisure is the vehicle, maybe a vehicle that gives it. It's certainly an accelerant.
A catalyst.
For our Eros, right? And we should all, it's something we should think about because it's that Eros love that will fuel our burning love for God, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's it, you know, we have and we might experience Eros for all kinds of beauty,
mm-hmm.
Especially for your spouse. But ultimately, God put that in us so that we would have it for him, so that like we would have this burning love mm-hmm. and need for him. And so the more time we have and more time we spend in real leisure thinking about the good things that surround us and just resting, having these like real leisure times, the better we'll be at that, the more accustomed we'll be to the good.
So do you think the best job for a man to have is a
priest?
Well, okay, so the best job for a layman to have is a farmer who's a philosophy teacher. Because you have the poetic knowledge, you have the actual servile work, so to speak, and then you have the end goal of like the desire and love of wisdom for the sake of wisdom. Like, is a philosophical farmer...
Now, we like making up jobs? Do you know any philosophical farmers?
I know one that's pretty close.
I mean, I know philosophers who do some farming.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't call them a farm. Like, when I think of a farmer, I think it's like a profession. Like, this is what you do for money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know.
And if you do that for money, you ain't got time to, like, be teaching philosophy, you know?
I know. I was thinking about that actually today.
But otherwise, that would be a good candidate. I don't know. That's a bit, you're asking a pretty big question.
Yeah.
Like the best job in the world.
You know what it's not? The president.
Definitely not the president. No. Or any other politician for that matter.
Because it's a circle.
Because those guys.
We're right back to the
beginning. I don't think they know anything about leisure.
Yeah. Anyway, I was thinking about that. I was like, I actually think that like being able to work on your land and like cultivate and grow and like
make and do and be with the dirt, and then being able to have time for the love of wisdom.
Yeah, that would be great. You know, but there's a lot of pushback here about American culture. Okay, American culture is...
What?
It's not one that's going to lend itself to leisure.
No.
Okay, and a lot of people, I think, get uncomfortable when you say, when you talk about what's the consequences here. The consequence of this is that one ought not to work more to earn more money than one needs.
Mm-hmm.
Think about, I mean, like,
yeah,
just think about that, yeah, because that is not at all what, like, the American spirit is about, you know.
We're a hustle and grind culture.
Right, at least, like, traditionally we are.
Yeah.
We're becoming a lot less of that, but we're not becoming more leisurely. We're becoming more idle,
yeah,
which is actually the direct opposite,
no doubt,
from leisure. But that is something for us to think and ponder about. Like, if I have all the money, ought I to pursue more, right?
You should share it with me.
Yes, exactly. Now, I'm not saying the answer is no, okay? You need to, like, everybody needs to figure that out, because obviously, yeah, you have to save for retirement. There's all kinds of stuff you got to do.
Give some to me.
And give some to Adam.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like a, like, whoa, hey, no, go there.
Right.
Feel to it, right? There is a story. I'll maybe close with this anecdote.
Okay.
I don't remember where I heard this story.
Okay.
But I kind of like it.
Kind of?
Not 100%.
Okay.
But more than 50.
Okay.
So there was a fisherman on a boat. He has a small fisherman. He was sleeping in his like little fishing boat. And a guy walking down the dock saw him sleeping. And it was like, you know, 2 PM. And he said, sir, why are you sleeping in this boat? And he said, well, this is my boat. And he said, well, why are you just, what are you doing? He's like, well, I've caught all the fish I need for the day. So figured I'd take a nap. And the guy said, well, you shouldn't do that. You should keep fishing. And the fisherman said, well, why? And the man said, well, that way you could earn more fish. You could, you know, and sell them for a profit. And you'd have more money. And he said, well, what would I do with that? And he's like, well, then you could buy another boat. And you could hire more fishermen. And then you could every day continue to earn more. You could catch more fish than you needed and have more money than you needed. And the guy's like, all right, why would I do that? He's like, well, then you could eventually grow this fishing empire into something where you'd make all this money and you'd have all of these things. And the fisherman said, well, then what? And he goes, then you could just, like, sit around and take a nap if you wanted.
Just do whatever you want.
And the guy said, that's what I'm trying to do right now. And and it's like, it's a good story about, are we really orienting our desires and our thoughts, our actions towards the good,
mm-hmm,
right? Towards this contemplation of the divine, mm-hmm, which is what this life is about. This life is about contemplation.
Yep.
It's about preparing ourselves for heaven. Yeah, dude.
I really hope I get there.
It seems like the best,
Lord willing.
So that's, I just wanted to end with that,
yeah,
and have people think about that.
I like that, yeah.
So, anything else?
Good luck on your talk.
Thank you.
I hope you don't blow it.
Yeah, everybody say a prayer for me, because even though it'll be after I've given the talk, prayers work outside of time, and so yeah, I can still benefit. And for Adam, too, for your talk in a week.
Yeah, especially mine.
Oh, can I just give an update?
Yeah.
This is a great story. We just in our own family. Okay. So Pam, you know, Lady Pamela, she's pregnant.
Oh, yes, I'm so glad you're doing this.
Having a baby, end of October, early November. Pamela's birthday's in October. She makes a big deal out about birthday month. Our whole marriage wanted a birthday month baby. She's really pushing for October. You can pray for that too if you want.
If you want.
If you do, you're just enabling, okay? Or maybe we just get it out of the way and I wouldn't have to hear about it anymore. But at our first anatomy scan, ultrasound, she was diagnosed with complete placenta previa, which is where the placenta is blocking the cervix, so the baby has no way out. Historically, this would have been a big problem. The baby would have certainly the baby would have died. Probably the mother would have very likely died also.
Yeah.
These days, C-section, no big deal.
It's a big deal.
No big deal compared to dying.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Way better than dying.
Yeah.
But that was disappointing, and we decided, you know what? We already knew, like, hey, if it's a boy, its middle name's going to be Stanley. And so, like, hey, let's.
Okay.
I have a great grandfather named Stanley.
Right.
But also, like.
Rother.
Yeah, Stanley Rother here in Oklahoma.
Which is pronounced Rother, by the way. It's Rother.
Right? It's like, quit Rother. Saying Rother.
Yeah,
it's stop Rother. It.
Yeah.
Just stop that. So, anyway, we decided we're going to dedicate this to him. And so every day we were praying to Blessed Stanley Rother. And we had another. It was complete. A complete previa. It can move. It's not like if as the womb grows, sometimes it will move, but it needed to move so much. Mm-hmm. Like, and she was already real far along.
Mm-hmm.
The chances were basically zero of that happening, unless you just pray about it a lot. And so we went back earlier this week, totally gone. Like her cervix has moved an astonishing amount, way more than
that's phenomenal, man.
Yeah. So, I just wanted to share that story. It's a great story about the power of prayer
and Blessed Stanley Rother
and Blessed Stanley Rother. Wouldn't count as a miracle because, you know, a placenta can move,
right?
But,
unlikely.
I know that it is, and it just, God is good.
It was definitely an answer prayer because we've been praying for it. And when you told me that just the other day, like one of those like goosebump show moments.
It is.
It's amazing the sensation that you have as a man when you're just completely filled with gratitude and like being grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And how your body reacts to that from a natural perspective.
Right. I know what you mean.
It's so weird. It's mm-hmm. like, and it's such an endorphin hit. Like you can just, like, it's just so amazing. It's intense. It's visceral. Like your body, it's just like, reacts to gratitude in such a unique way.
Right. Yeah. Especially such a private, like this was something that was done. It's like, oh, it wasn't for the community. Right.
Right.
It was for you.
Right.
Like it's just for you.
And this baby. Yeah.
So. Yeah. Anyway.
Praise God.
Praise God. He's good. We'll see you guys next week.
Pray for us.